Blog Talk Radio.
At Horizon, the images were startling. New York City, summer 2023. Its horizon lit by a ruby red sky as sunlight tried to shine through smoke and ash from Canada's roaring fire season. First came the shock of learning that Canada had a fire season. I thought it had only four seasons. Second was learning that Canada had over 400 fires raging on its eastern forest shores. Then the smoke from these fires sweeps southwards to over 15 U.S. states, closing schools and businesses. And here in Pennsylvania, prisons. This is some stunning stuff. New York City and its famous skyline, obscured by red smoke, made the city look like a skyline from Krypton, like a sci-fi movie. New York City, for one day, scored the most polluted city on Earth. Will this become an annual event? In 10 years, how many people will be made more sick with asthma or perhaps lung cancer? Who can say? Is climate change real or a hoax? Look out your window, for it's as clear as the nose on your face. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at Hotep to everyone. Welcome to another edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet. And we apologize for what happened last week, family. It was totally beyond our control. For whatever reason, we could not get things started last week. Had a lot of technical difficulties. Fortunately, we are here, black and living color, and hopefully we'll be okay. You never know, particularly as you just heard Mumia talk about what's going on. You know, these past couple of days have been very interesting. To see the air literally right before your eyes, to see what it was and to have to breathe that stuff, and people having to wear masks again. Of course, it affected areas such as New York, D.C., Baltimore, Philly, Newark, New Jersey. I mean, we got hit really hard a couple of those days. And so, when we talk about emergency response, and certainly some of us have been talking about that, we have to now really look very seriously and carefully at how are we really prepared. And so we're going to be holding some very serious sessions about how to be more on point in dealing with emergency response, preparedness, crisis prevention, and intervention. Our sister Sheila Brown did an excellent presentation a couple of weeks ago. It was roughly 3 hours, and it was so on point. So we're going to be doing some of those things in our communities, not just here in Philadelphia, but in other cities. We're coming to other cities, and of course we'll be doing some things via Zoom as well. Might as well use the technology because it's using us. So we need to do whatever we can to connect to our people and get this information circulated. Speaking of connecting and good jobs, though, jobs well done and all of that, if you did not see Sister Keisha's program, Thorough Black Talk, the other evening, I strongly suggest that you go and check it out. Interestingly enough, again, when we talk about not only emergency response and preparedness, but what's also going on in our communities. Well, not only that, but when I said earlier that the system is using us. Well, check out Sister Keisha's program. She really brought some very good information about what Apple is getting ready to release in terms of what are the next phases or waves of technology. And when you see that, if you haven't already, I'm telling you folks, you better get ready, because these people got some serious plans that they're getting ready to put in action. I mean, they already got some stuff in place, but they got some stuff that's getting ready to jump off on a wide scale. And again, how prepared are we going to be? To what degree are we going to get sucked into the rabbit hole? Because I'm telling you, that's what it looks like, for real, for real. And again, I'm not going to go into the details right now. We'll hopefully get Sister Keisha on, a few other folk on, to talk about it in the future. We have some folk that are really, really into technology. And so as we are reviewing some of the information, we will definitely be sharing it with you and having some more in-depth conversations about some of the kinds of technology that our children and their children are going to be interacting with on a day-to-day basis. And just like the way we're interacting now, they're going to be interacting in some stuff that you really need to know about. So again, if you want to check out Sister Keisha's program, you can go to YouTube and just put in Thorough Black Talk. And again, the discussion that dealt with what Apple is getting ready to release, I believe, next year. I'm sure they have it some, you know, in certain locations already. But in terms of the, you know, the wider public, it will be available next year. And I'm telling you folks, y'all better be aware. That's all I can say, because it's coming and you're not going to be able to escape it. You may not have to utilize it directly yourself, but certainly someone that you know will be. And the impact that it's going to have on our people is something that we really need to be more aware of and definitely more prepared for. So we'll talk more about that later. Again, we opened up with Mumia Abu-Jamal, and again, what he was referring to is what we have had to breathe in the past week or so. Now, interestingly enough, and I didn't catch it, I was in New York last week. I went up for one of the sessions for the United Nations, the African Forum, Permanent Forum. I went up for one of the sessions on that. And as I was traveling through New Jersey, an alert went through the phone. Now, this was a week ago. The alert went through the phone indicating that the air in that part of New Jersey was hazardous. Right. And I was on a train. So, you know, I was like, oh, you know, it's just something in that area going on, because I didn't see it anywhere else. It didn't pop up anywhere else. It just happened to pop up in that particular location. And then it disappeared. Right. And it said something about fires and you know, smoke and da 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 da. And, you know, I just figured there was a fire in the area. And, you know, it was really, you know, pretty bad. And they were just letting people know, you know, hey, you got to be careful, be aware. Well, as it turns out, this thing has been brewing for quite some time now. And again, certain locations had already been hit with it. We didn't get it here in Philly until this past week, for the most part, or at least you couldn't see it in the same way that you saw it and smelt it in this past week. And I'm telling you, as soon as you hit outside, it was almost overwhelming. You had to put on a mask or something, because that's how strong it was. But at any rate, the question now is, what the heck was that? For real, y'all, for real. Now, they're talking about some fires in Canada and blah, blah, blah. What is really going on? I mean, we better really think a little bit about this, okay? And again, getting into emergency response and preparedness, how prepared are we to even help to lessen certain things? Now, we know we're dealing with water contamination. We've programmed numerous times before. Newark had an issue. Certainly Flint, and other cities, Baltimore, et cetera. So we know that there's a situation with water. Now here in Philly, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, they literally had to put out an emergency for a couple of days because something had spilled in one of the nearby rivers, and so there was a possibility of contamination that would have hit directly into Philly as opposed to some of the outs, the more outskirts of it. And so for a couple of days, they were, warning people about not drinking the water, not bathing in the water, and so forth. So people were really caught off guard. Some of the stores ran out of water. Again, this stuff is happening right before our eyes. So the question has to be, what are we going to do? What is our plan of action? And so, again, MWM is one of the few entities that I know of that is black, straight up, no chaser, that is literally bringing information and other things into our communities that deals with emergency response and preparedness. I mean, realistically, in fact, I talked with a sister today, and she has agreed to do some CPR classes for our folks. Another class she's going to do is blood stoppage, something I think that's what it's called, where if there's a cut, a very deep cut, a gunshot, or some other thing where blood is, profuse or, needs to be stopped, she's going to do a whole class on that, in order to do something while we're waiting for additional help to come. Our sisters definitely have to know, our people in general, but our sisters in particular, again, because the women tend to be the ones that have the children with them oftentimes the most. I mean, it's just basic common sense. So, again, we're going to tell you more about that as we proceed. We've got to deal with some day-to-day basic kinds of things, y'all. This is what time it is. So, again, we're going to be telling you more about that as we proceed with the Million Woman World March. Oh, my gosh. It is certainly picking up speed, as they say. We had a session on Monday. We had one on, was it Thursday? Yep, I think it was Thursday. No, Friday. We had one on Friday. So things are definitely beginning to grow and develop. And, we're very, very thankful for those who is taking the time to join in. Those who are not, shame on you. That's all I can say. Because the time is not like it was before, where people can just kind of, ignore or act like they don't know or whatever. That's not going to work for you this time. I can guarantee you that there's going to be some very different kinds of responses that is going to happen. So let us move on. Tonight, we are going to talk with Dr. John Johnson. Now, for those who have been listening to New Day for a while, because we're in our 14th year now, Dr. Johnson has been on our program a few times. And it's, it just kind of shows how MWM and New Day and some of our affiliates, it kind of just shows how not only are we serious, but we're very consistent. And so for at least, I would say, 8 years or so, if not more, we have been connected to Dr. Johnson. And so we have a commitment to him, his family, as we do with other things. And the point is that Monday is what some observe as Women's Veterans Day. Yep. Another one of those holidays that a lot of times you don't know nothing about, but it's definitely happening. At any rate, so we felt it would be very appropriate, also considering the fact that the We Charge Genocide 21 project is now moving forward. In fact, the Queen Mother More Weekend is coming, and some of the sessions that we will be holding, 21 sessions, if not more, but definitely 21, because that's the We Charge Genocide 21 represents at least 21 areas of crimes against humanity, against our people. And so one of those areas, of course, is our black veterans. And we're talking about from the Civil War to present day. We charge genocide. But, you know, of course, realistically, we have to deal with more recent times. And so we will be documenting, accumulating information so that it can be readily available and ultimately submitted. Also, any types of lawsuits that we can provide or bring forward, that is our intention to do so. And so tonight we're going to talk a bit with Dr. John Johnson, whose daughter was murdered while serving in Iraq. And for those that do not know, it wasn't the so-called enemy that they were supposed to be fighting. It happened right within her unit. And when you hear the details of some of this, surely it'll be more on point when you hear us say we charge genocide 21, in addition to some other things. One of the other issues we've been talking about here on New Day is the fact that the violence and abuse of our women and girls is off the hook. And again, of course, all over the country, violence and abuse against our people is evident. But at the same time, we're not hearing much or as much as we should about when it comes to our women and girls. So it's not just, rape, molestation, exploitation, sex trafficking, and these are things that are primarily targeted to our women and girls. But you are not hearing a lot of discussion about it. And unfortunately, other women have more information and are saying more things about it than we are. You see, that shouldn't be happening, not in this day and age. And so we are really now upping the ante and moving forward with establishing operational components to address the violence and abuse of our women and girls on a national level. And so tonight I'm going to share with you some of what we're getting ready to bring forward with the Million Women World March. It's not just a march, y'all. I can guarantee you it is not just a march. So for those who have already started with, marching, don't play that with us, please, because you're only going to make yourself look stupid. This is a totally different thing that's getting ready to happen, as you will begin to hear some of it tonight. But at any rate, we're going to talk to, again, Dr. John Johnson, and we're going to review what happened to his daughter in 2005, I believe it was. We share this information for a lot of reasons. One, they need justice. We need justice. That's probably first and foremost. But also, a lot of our youth are looking at going into the service. And so particularly with our young girls, we need to make sure that they are aware or more aware of some very critical things. And the other thing we want to point out is that a year or so back, there was a Latino woman who, a lot was being talked about in terms of her and what had happened with her. But yet when it came to Lavina Johnson, you didn't hear anything unless it was coming from her family. And then, of course, the various entities that began to, report on it by way of that. But in terms of the mass media or, the communication outlets and so forth, like they did with the Latino woman, that didn't happen with Lavina. That didn't happen for the Johnsons. And so we need to really know and understand, which is why we are developing our own everything. We must take matters into our own hands when it comes to making certain that our information is put out there as much as possible and in the manner that it needs to be presented. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But again, want to remind everyone, what you're going to hear tonight is unsettling, and that puts it mildly, because Dr. Johnson is going to, you know, convey things just straight up. And, you know, we want our people to be clear that, you know, we need to demand that the investigation of Lavina Johnson's death, and private first class was what she was given. But we need to, as a people, we need to make sure or do some effort to make an attempt for her murder investigation to be reopened. I mean, that needs to happen. So with the We Charge Genocide 21, that is something that we're going to be talking about next month. This case needs to be reopened. People need to know more about it. And we feel that it is our responsibility to make certain that this happens. So without further ado, I do believe, Dr. Johnson is in queue. And so we're going to bring him in. And family, please be so kind to, unless you have a very good memory, please take some notes, because we want our people to do some things. Our conversations is not just about listening to information. It is also about sharing it, and also about strategizing and doing something. Everybody can do something. And so we're going to get ready to now talk with Dr. Johnson. Again, you're going to hear some things that might be a little disturbing, but we need to say it as it is, because this young sister was 19 years of age. To have what happened to her, to just be pushed underneath the rug, it's unacceptable. So we're going to bring Dr. Johnson in a few moments. I just want to also remind you that later on we're going to talk to Brother Reeven Fellows. He'll be joining us to give us a report from what some call Chirac or Chicago. Again, to remind people that we've got to have our own. When you hear his report, surely it'll help you to, you know, it'll joggle you up a little to let you know that, yes, we have to be here. We have to do things here in this land. But we need to make sure we begin to move forward in securing things that we can have a bit more control over ourselves as a people. And with the issues of reparations now going all over the country as it is, the capability to do that is certainly more than feasible. And we'll go more into that a little later on. But for right now, let's go to our lifeline, and again, Monday is what many commemorate as Women's Veterans Day or Veterans Women's Day. I'm not sure which comes first, but y'all get the gist of it. And again, we would be remiss if we did not bring some things to you that we feel is relevant to us as a people as it pertains to Women's Veterans Day or Veterans Women's Day. With that said, we're going to have a dialogue about something that some of you are aware of and some of you are not, but certainly we are bringing to you tonight that action needs to take place. Remember, there's no statute of limitations on murder. So even though this happened some time ago, the fact of the matter is it is not resolved. It's just like with our ancestors. People say, well, yeah, that happened a couple hundred years ago. Oh, so and so the damage, the pain, the suffering, that's just to be dismissed because it happened whenever. No, it we have to heal from certain things. Anyway. Let's go to our live line and let's talk with Dr. Johnson. Again, this is Private First Class Lavina Johnson's father, and we're going to turn the mic over to him in a few moments. And family, I trust that you will be very attentive. And again, feel free to take notes, because we will ask if you have questions. We will give you the opportunity then. Okay, so without further ado, let's go to our live line and let's welcome once again Dr. John Johnson. And greetings to you, Dr. Johnson. How are you this evening?
Hanging in there for sure.
No, sir, you're not hanging in there. You're standing strong and tall.
Thank you. Thank you.
So before we go into tonight's conversation, I would just like for you to share a little bit about you. And again, we know how sometimes people may say something or think something, or they might have heard something. And this system is very easy to try to make it seem like someone is neither, mentally stable or capable, or they haven't done the kind of investigation that they could. Well, they weren't capable of. So my point is, share, please, Dr. Johnson, a little bit about you, so that those that might not know what we're getting ready to talk about will know that you're not only speaking from the position of a father, but you're also speaking from the position of both a professional and also a former veteran yourself.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was raised in the projects. The half of my childhood, my mother and father were together, but they finally broke up. So technically, my mother raised me. When I finished while I was in high school, I was an average student, but I ran track and I played football, and I was pretty good at both of them. So my mother advocated that we get a college education, and I thought my athletic ability was going to get me an education. Unfortunately, when I graduated from high school, I was 5'7", I weighed 145 pounds. Although I was pretty good in football, I didn't get a football scholarship. I ran track, and people kind of offered me a scholarship to run track, but, back in those days, track didn't offer any kind of money, whereas football did. Mm-hmm. So when I got out of high school, I gave myself 3 months to find me a job, and I couldn't. So I had talked to a couple of relatives that had served in the military, and so I asked them, I'm thinking about going into the Army. And, of course, there were both pros and cons. The only real negative thing was Vietnam was coming up. And they said, being a black male, you're going to end up in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fine and dandy for them to tell me that, but I had to make some decisions for myself. So I went and I joined the Army. I volunteered for 3 years. I trained to go into combat, and I really thought that I was going to end up fighting in the war. But I ended up being sent to Würzburg, Germany, and I was there for 2 years. And that's when things kind of start going bad. White males really didn't want me in the Army for whatever reason, so they kept calling me the N-word. And, of course, being raised in the projects, I had a little taste of temper, so I pop them in the mouth. So I got tired of fighting, white boys, and I'm trying to serve this country. So I made a decision, when my time's up, I'm going to get the hell out of here, So I got out of the Army. I was honorably discharged after 3 years. And so I ended up with a football scholarship because I played football and I ran track when I was in the Army. And so I ended up getting scholarships kind of after the fact. I went to Lincoln on a football scholarship, and I stayed up there one semester after the football season was over, I decided, you know what, I want to get me an education, but I don't want anybody to have control over whether I get it or not. And the head coach tried to make me run track after the football season was over, and I said, no, I'm not doing two sports in college. So he mm-hmm. took my scholarship away from me. So I dropped out. I ended up playing professional football up in Joliet, Illinois. And mm-hmm. I saved up to pay some money, so I decided, okay, I'm going back to school, but I'm going to pay my own way. So I went back to Lincoln, and I worked a full-time job. I took a full load, and I graduated in 3 years. After that, I started working for the Department of the Army as a civilian while I worked on my master's degree. And I have a Bachelor's of Arts degree. In fact, I was the first black student from Lincoln University to get a Bachelor of Arts degree in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so I worked on my master's degree, and I have a MA degree from Webster University in behavioral science. And I have a PhD in psychology from Leavenworth College and Seminary. So here I am working for the Department of the Army, and again, they treated me like dirt. They mm-hmm. would promote people over me, but I figured out one thing, that they didn't want me working for the government either. But I took the civil service exam just like everybody else in past, so they mm-hmm. had to hire me. So I realized they tried to fire me, number one, because I had a beard, and they asked me to shave, and I told them to go to hell. And so that didn't help me much. But I worked as long as I could, and I invested money, fortunately, mm-hmm. you know, that helped. So I got a chance to get an early retirement. And mm-hmm. so I took it. After 25 years, I went on and got out of there. And I think when I retired early, my daughter, Lavina, got nervous. That's what I really think. So she would, then 9/11 happened. And when 9/11 happened, her mind changed. She talked about going to college all her life, pretty much, and she was mm-hmm. an honor roll student, you know, and so she was working her grades to accomplish that. So she, one thing we always did, we always went to sporting events together. I refereed basketball, and my daughter would say, okay, I'm going to pay for you to go to the game. And a lot of times they knew who I was from refereeing basketball, so they let me in free most of the time. And then we also went to football games. My baby daughter played in the band. So we spent a lot of time together, plus my boys all played basketball, and they were in tournaments just about all over the U.S., so we did a lot of traveling together as a family. And then, in fact, my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law used to travel with us a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at a basketball game, and Lavina turns to me, and she said, Dad, I have a question for you. And I said, okay. She said, both Keisha's her baby sister, 2 years her junior. We both talking about going to college. Do you have money to send both of us to college? And I said, well, let's do it like this. Let's get you through school, and then we'll uh-huh. worry about the college when we get to that point. She said, how do you feel if I told you, don't worry about me, I can get my own money?
Right.
So I asked, well, how are you going to do that? She said, I'm going in the Army. I said, going in the Army? She said, yeah. I said, why do you want to go in the Army? She said, well, first of all, didn't you go in the Army out of high school? I said, yeah, you know, you're a female. And she goes, oh, Dad, that's the first time I've ever heard you talk chauvinistic. And I went, oh, man. This... So I go, wait, hold on. I'm going to be blunt with you, Kenna. Now, we're supposed to be watching basketball.
Right.
I said, you know they're going to send you to Iraq, don't you? And she said, my recruiter said I don't have to go to Iraq. And I he can't make that decision. When you sign up, you become a GI. Technically, you give up your American citizenship, although you serve in your country. They can do anything they want. And she said, that's not what my recruiter told me. I said, I tell you what. Tell him to come over to the house and talk to me. And she said, okay. So this dude comes to my house and he brings some little young guy with him that was apparently doing well in the Army. And I said, you said my daughter won't have to go to Iraq. How can you guarantee her that? And he said, none of the people that I recruit go to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but you can't make that decision. So then I told Lavina, I said, before you make a decision, let's get some information about you going into the Air Force, because I had a problem with the Army based on my experience. And mm-hmm. she said, it's too late. I said, what do you mean it's too late? She said, I've already signed up.
Mm.
I said, you've signed up? And she said, yes, sir. So now I got a problem. I don't want to talk negative about the Army, and I didn't want to share my experiences because as far as I knew, things had changed.
Mm-hmm.
So she go into the Army. She goes to do her basic in North Carolina, and we drove up there from Missouri to be at her graduation, and she was, I was so proud of her. She didn't know her left foot from her right to see her marching, turning and everything, and carrying that rifle all at the same time. I was so, you know, she's always made us proud. All of our kids did. I didn't tell you this, but I have three older sons.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was a gifted student, made straight A's in college, but he didn't graduate and because he wanted to make some money. He just got tired of being broke, you know.
Right.
They didn't understand. I had a resolve about me, man. They dressed nice. They ate well. We had nice vehicles. I was in debt most of the time. But I always, my wife was a stay-home mom, so we budgeted our money. We really got all we could from the money that I made. So
mm-hmm.
then, again, retirement time came up. I got the hell out of there. I was sick of them. And so my daughter then told me she was getting ready to leave to go into service. And she told me not to tell her mother. My wife and I, this past June, 4th of June, we've been married 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't keep secrets from each other. I tell my wife stuff regardless to how it feels, because I don't want any secrets between us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, so what you want me to do? She said, I'll tell Mom. So she told her, and now bouncing back, recruiters came over, told me, you know, she had already signed up. So the next thing I know, she packing up her stuff, and she left.
Mm-hmm.
Went into the Army. Was ended up at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, before she found out she was going to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened there was it was six females that were supposed to go to Iraq. Lavina had a battle buddy when she was at Fort Campbell. Somebody messed up the paperwork, and they were supposed to have they leave before they were deployed to Iraq. Somebody messed up the paperwork, so they got 4 days. Some white female called her congressman and raised hell about it. So mm-hmm. they ended up shipping that white female to Germany. So I'm asking Lavina, I said, well, she was your battle buddy? And she said, yes. So I go, okay, so they're going to assign you another battle buddy? She said, I don't know. I said, no, they're supposed to because that's protocol. She said, well, what do you want me to do, Dad? I said, I'm going to do what that woman did. I'm going to call my congressman and raise hell because I don't want you going over to Iraq and you don't have a battle buddy. A battle buddy is a person that's commensurable in age and sex, and you look out for each other 24/7. So she gets Fort Campbell talked to her, and they called the Army and said, since she doesn't have a battle buddy, why don't you leave her here and she can help in our recruiting? So they told my daughter that's what they were going to do, and the general in Iraq said, no, send her butt over here. So they told my daughter, you're going to have to go to Iraq. Now, this is where her daddy, people always told her, you look like your daddy, you act like your daddy, you think like your daddy. This is when the daddy part came out. She actually went to the company commander there and said, look, the white girl's parents raised hell, and she gets sent to Germany, but you're talking about sending me to Iraq, and I don't have a battle buddy. And they said, well, we can't do anything about it. So they sent my daughter. She was deployed on the 31st of May. She was in Afghan, I think, for a week, and then she was shipped to Iraq. She was there 6 weeks, and they found her dead in a contractor's tent. Well, on the 19th of July in 2005, and by the way, it's going on 18 years. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah, next month will be 18 years. Yeah, yeah. So they, my daughter called me on the 14th from Iraq, and I asked her, I said, have you been assigned a battle buddy? And she said, no, sir. I said, Lavina, you want me to call Lacey Clay? And she said, Dad, please don't put me on the spot. So I said, yeah, but you over there with a bunch of horny people, young dudes, they ain't had none for a while. Plus, you got contractors over there. And, you know, I just don't feel like it's safe for you. But I want you to go and ask your company commander. You can tell him your daddy said it. I don't care, you know. She said, I'll see. And I said, okay. Now, she was assigned to the communications center. They gave her a key. She was responsible for opening up the communications center and closing it up in the evenings. When I talked to her on the 14th, I got upset, and this is what she said. She said, I got ready to close the center, and the soldiers wouldn't leave. The general came in here, and he told them to leave. Then he told me the reason they didn't leave was because my voice was too soft. And I thought, wait a minute, why in the hell is a general coming to the communications center, first of all, and why in the hell is he talking to a private like that, especially a female?
Mm-hmm.
That made me nervous. That night, we got off the phone, and this is how we ended our conversation. My daughter said, told me I wasn't coming over here to Iraq, and I'm over here, and the scorpions over here look like rats. And plus, it's scorching hot. And she said, I found out I'm going to be rotating back to the States in November. I'll be in the States for a year. After that year, I'll have to come back over here and finish out my time. She said, and I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to go to college, which is what I should have done in the first place. So she had started feeling a little uneasy about her vicarious position, you know. She told me, during that same conversation, I'm going to be getting a different job come Monday, and I don't know what it's going to be yet. And I said, okay. She said, so if I don't call you Monday, don't get upset, because she called home. I didn't say this, but ever since she was in the Army, she called home every day. Basic training, AIT, when she was in Afghan, when she was in Iraq, she called home every day. Well, she was in that communication center, so she had access to a phone. So it wasn't a problem, you know, like that. So when we didn't hear from her on the 18th, we didn't worry, because she said she was going to get a new job.
Mm-hmm.
The morning of the 19th, we get a ring at our doorbell. My wife looks out the window, and she said, it's a soldier on the porch. And I said, oh, hell. She said, what's the matter? I said, something done happened to Lavina. She said, you're kidding me. I said, no, they don't send soldiers to your house for no reason. I opened the door, and it's a staff sergeant. So I'm looking at him, and I'm going, yeah? He said, are you John Johnson? Yeah. Where's your wife? I said, that's my wife standing on the balcony. He stepped in my foyer, and he goes, this morning, Davina L. Johnson died of a self-inflicted wound. I said, well, self-inflicted wound? He said, yeah. It shocked me so bad, I fell back on the steps. My wife just screamed, and she just fell on the balcony floor, just banging on the floor. She was, oh, man, and the kids heard her. So my sons came upstairs. One of my oldest boy came to me. Everybody else went to their mama. And my wife said, they done killed my daughter. I know it. They done killed my daughter. So I told this dude, I said, I'm going to tell you something, man. You can go and tell your bosses. I'm mad now. I'm going to say something, but I was mad. They done fucked with the wrong nigga. And he said, okay. Now, to show you, they quoted that in the report, you know. So when he left here, my wife was so upset. I had to call my doctor, and he sent a sedative to get her to calm down, and it didn't work not one bit. So my son came and he said, talk to me. He said, Dad, he said, what are we going to do? And I said, they inferred that Lavina committed suicide. And number one, I socialized that girl. And I know her just for life. So they done lied on my daughter. And since they done upset my whole family, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to fight their asses back. I called my brother, and the reason I called him, because he had a degree in criminal science.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, I said, hey, man, they just came to my house and said my daughter committed suicide in Iraq. And he said, really? I said, yeah, here's the problem, though. They sent a damn staff sergeant. He said, a staff sergeant? And I said, yeah. They didn't, wasn't no chaplain going to come to my house and tell that lie. That's why they sent a staff. And he followed orders.
Right.
He said, have you gotten anything yet? And I said, no, man, just stay word. He said, John, you got to get some, make them send you the paperwork. So I called the person that was the casualty liaison. He was the one that came here about telling me about the benefits, and they offered to bury my daughter in Arlington National Cemetery. So I told him, I said, wait a minute, hold up. You're going to put my daughter in the same cemetery where John F. Kennedy is buried. He said, I'm just giving you your options. I said, hell no, I'm not putting her in Arlington. I'm going to put her out there in Jefferson Barracks because I might have to end up exhuming that body because they got a problem with me, and I've already launched an investigation into my daughter's death. So I called around and asked people if they knew anybody in Iraq. Some people did. I got two messages. One of them said that a female cook had found my daughter's body in a contractor's tent. The second message that I got, it was a contractor's tent that was off limits to military personnel. So I said, okay. So finally, I called the casualty NCO, and I said, when am I going to get some paperwork? Because I want to launch my investigation. Wasn't no use me biting my tongue. I wanted them to know I was coming after them.
Mm-hmm.
So he called the criminal investigator, and he called me back. He said the criminal investigator said the evidence in this case is so messed up, it's going to take a year to straighten out. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, okay. Mm-hmm. So I waited. When the information came, I got a package from the autopsy center in Dover Air Force Base and from Rock Island, I think that's where the written the documents were. But when I opened the package, there were no authentic original pictures. It was all Xerox copies. So my brother and me compiled a letter, and we sent it back to the Army, and we said, number one, how come I didn't get a copy of this CD? Somebody sent a picture of a CD-ROM, but the information off of it. So I said, I want a copy of this CD. They told me I had to go to their legal department. So I said, okay. So I went to Lacey Clay, who was my congressman at the time, and we, my brother and me, we put together a preliminary report, you know, stuff extracted from the black and white stuff that they sent us. And Senate gave it to Lacey Clay. His office looked it over, and they got concerned. So they sent a letter to Donald Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of Defense at that time, and asked him to reopen our case because it didn't seem like the conclusion that was reached was proper. And Donald Rumsfeld sent them a letter. They gave me a copy of the letter they sent to him, but they didn't give me the copy from Donald Rumsfeld. And he said, there are witnesses that the young lady committed suicide. My condolences to the family. And I said, wow. Lacey Clay's office called the JAG office and said, look, I think you guys got a problem. Somebody done murdered this man's daughter, and he done proved it. You guys really need to look and reopen this case. the JAG office said we were told to stay out of this case. So when they said that, I told my brother, I said, you know what? I see how this is going to go. So I'm going to put together an investigation team. Would you help me out? He said, yeah. So I had him. I had another brother who had a degree in criminal science, who had a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. He was a homicide detective for 30 years, till he retired. And he was a non-commissioned officer in the Army for 10 years. I had a lady who saw me on TV and ended up coming to a party to meet my sister, and she has a degree in journalism. So we formed a team we had three people at first, me, my brother, and this journalist. She turned out to be a tremendous researcher. Any questions we had, she would go on the internet and she could find it. So one day she called me. She said, we need to have a debriefing. I got an idea. I said, oh, okay. So we got together and she said, why don't we send this case to the Cold Case Institute?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I've watched them on TV. They dig into stuff real heavy. She said, let me call the lady that's in charge. Her name is Cheryl. What was that woman's name? I'll think of her name. Her first name was Cheryl. Anyway, she called her, and she said, well, we can't take until we talk to the father. So my journalist got the three of us, McCullum, Cheryl McCullum was her name. So the three of us got on the phone. So she said, well, I'm going to tell you what. From what I've heard from your journalist, this case seems awful strange.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to let my students decide if they want to investigate this case. I said, here's the understanding I would like to have with you. The national media will not cover our story. I said, I got my daughter's body exhumed, and 60 Minutes came here from New York, and they were supposed to feature us on 60 Minutes. In lieu of the fact that I had her body exhumed, they didn't do it. I said, so we need a kind of a ruling from you, and then whatever you rule, you take it to the national media. Now, I stepped out on faith then, but I was pretty confident that my team had picked up this was a homicide.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, started looking through the case, and then I put Donna was my journalist's name. I put her in charge of communicating with them because I didn't want anybody to say they were communicating with me and I influenced them. So Donna called me and she said, John, we got a problem. I said, what kind of problem? She said, the administration done heard from the Army, and the Army said if they come up with a report on Lavina, they're going to sue him. And I said, sue him? Yeah, something's wrong, something very wrong. So I said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to fly down there. So I flew to Philadelphia, and I met with the Cold Case Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave them a lecture on doing the right thing. And I said this. I said, I'm going to tell you something right now. You people are being trained to be police officers and FBI agents and CIA agents or whatever the case may be. If you're not going to have compassion for what you do, don't get into anything pertaining to people other than burying them and putting them in a grave. They clapped. Then they gave a demonstration. I gave the lecture, and they were doing exactly what the Army said. So I start questioning them. Since they're going to play the Army's game, they had a guy who was standing up there, claims he heard a shot, and he ran down and found Lavina dead. So I stopped him. I said, oh, wait, right there. You mean to tell me on that whole post only one person heard a gunshot wound? He said, I'm just doing what they told me to do. I said, okay, no problem. I said, where was the rifle? He said, they didn't tell me that. There was no rifle. Did you know that? They said, no. All these pictures that they took, they did not have a rifle in any of them. One of the ladies that found the body went and got an MP. He came and looked at the body, and the criminal investigator asked him, where did you see the rifle? He said, I didn't see a rifle, and I looked around the body. Now, all of a sudden, a rifle shows up. Are you still there?
Yes, yes.
A rifle shows up. But more bizarre than that, they had a bullet cartilage shell that they say they found under her thigh. So I said, wait, hold up. I said, I'm an Army vet, and I'm very familiar with the M16 rifle. And when you hold that rifle up to your right shoulder and you pull that trigger, that shell extracts out of that cartilage and it falls to the right for right-handed people.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how it ended up under her leg. He said, I can't explain. I said, okay. I'm going, okay. So we get back home. I'm jumping all over the place because, you know, I can talk on this for 4 hours, and I know you don't want to be here for 4 hours. going back to Lacey Clay's office, when we met there, they wanted to come to my house and talk to me. And I told them, you must be crazy. You think I'm going to let you come into my house and lie on my daughter when you've already traumatized my whole family? I said, my wife can't sleep at night, man. I had to put her under a doctor's care. So I ain't letting you in my house. I'll meet you in Lacey Clay's office. So they flew here from Washington and met me in Lacey Clay's office. Man, I used their paperwork. I ain't bragging, but I tore their butts up with their paperwork. I handed them a sketch. I said, tell me what that is. And they said, it's a sketch of the crime scene. How many pools of blood do you see on there? He said, this is a criminal investigator I'm talking to. He says, there's an indication that there are two. Yes, there is. And there's pictures that shows there are two pools of blood. Now tell me how somebody shoot themselves in the mouth with an M16 rifle like you said and end up with a pool of blood surrounding her head and one on her right side that's almost as low as her waist. How did that happen? He said there was a bench that was turned up on the body, and it had blood on it. And when they picked the blood up, that formed that pool of blood. I said, oh, so you pick up a bench, and I'm assuming you pick it up to move it. You got gravity drops of blood all over the place, and you got two pools of blood, but there's no drops of blood coming from that pool that's near her waist. You just lied to me. Lacey Clay was sitting, listen, just looking right in the mouth. I said, here's something else, man. I said, my daughter got off of work wearing a military work uniform. She went into barracks. She changed in jogging shirt, jogging pants, infrared reflecting belt around her waist, and then you're going to say she walked all the way across the post and went into a contractor's tent that was off limits to soldiers and conveniently found a bench in there to sit on to shoot herself. And you saying that's logical. And that idiot said yes. I said, you know what, man? I said, I'm going to be honest with you. I said, so you think I'm just plain old stupid? Just go on and say it. He said, oh, no, sir, we don't think you're stupid. I said, you know what, man? My team is better educated than investigative team that investigated this case because they couldn't tell, according to them, the difference between a homicide and a suicide. He said, sir, your daughter was going with somebody and they broke up and she was really upset about it. And so she tried to get him back and he didn't want her back. And so she committed suicide. I said, when the hell did you get that? He said, I can't, that's what the evidence is, and according to AR zippity zippity do, that's a suicide. I said, no. People can lie their butts off. This evidence that you sent me says this was a homicide. Tell me how my daughter stuck a rifle in her mouth, end up falling back on her back, pull her pockets inside out, and threw her hand covering her right arm over her face. That's impossible. Well, I can't explain how all that happened. I said, I tell you what, and I said this in front of Lacey Clay. I said, I'm going to tell you, you're criminal investigators. You're supposed to speak on behalf of the victim. That's what your mandate says. But you spoke in terms of supporting the Army in a cover-up. And I said, and I'm going to tell you right now, I told Lacey Clay, I said, we need to have a congressional hearing. I want to present evidence to Congress so we can let them make a determination on it. Lacey Clay didn't say anything, but he came out of there and he tried to get a congressional hearing. Carl Levin said right out, I ain't fighting with the Army. Blunt, who's still a Missouri senator, I called him and asked him to if I could send him the evidence. He going to send me a paper to fill out. You know, that didn't work. Then you had Ike Skelton. When I was up in Washington, I went and talked to him. He was the Secretary of Defense at that time. I told him, I showed the evidence to his staff members, and they told him that it looked like a homicide. And he said, I'm gonna help you get justice. He writes Lacey Clay a letter saying that Robert Gates was an angel who was the new Secretary of Defense after Rumsfeld. And people started jumping all over him because these rapes kept coming, and every now and then a young lady would get murdered. So I'm out there, you know, putting my evidence out there. So then I decided, you know what, I'm going to see if I can get an attorney to look at this, see if I can sue they butts. I couldn't get an attorney to take our case.
Right.
Now, here lately, young lady, I think she was Hispanic, got beat up by some white boys.
Mm-hmm.
She took pictures of her wounds and sent them to her mother. 10 days after that, she was found dead. The Army said she put a plastic bag over her head and killed herself. So some of the
wow.
people who looked at, excuse me?
Wow.
Yeah. So some of the people that be keep eyes and ears open for me called me and told me about it. So they got mad, and they called the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, we done looked over this evidence, and this doesn't look like a suicide. Yeah, it's a suicide. So they said, sounds like another Lavina Johnson to me. He said, that doctor. He went through the evidence and picked out what he could use to support a homicide. She said, like bite marks on her body and foreign substance poured in the vaginal area. He said, she was sexually active. Now, look, this stuff that was pouring out of Lavina's vaginal area was a coagulant. It was hard. And as it started to come out, it got hard. They had to go in there and chip it out with a I think they said a chip and a hammer, because it was too hard, and they couldn't cut it out because they didn't want to cut her body, I guess. I don't know. So anyway, so the thing with Cold Case Institute fell apart, you know, let me tell this. About the Cold Case Institute. Those students that had looked over that case, they were going to make the report anyway. So Donna made an arrangement to travel to Philadelphia to meet them. She took all her equipment up there. She talked to them that night. They said they were going to give her an interview. She sat up there waiting for him, and he never showed up. And she spent her money, hauled all her equipment and everything else up there. Now, here's the latest that's involved with us. Now, the Army, when this young lady had the bag, they found a plastic bag over her head. When the parents went to the Army to inquire about her death, they don't say self-inflicted wound anymore. They said it looked like it's not a homicide.
So, wow.
Oh, let me tell you one more thing. There's a gentleman by the name of Donald V. Watkins. Donald V. Watkins saw our case on the internet, so he called me. He said, I'm going to send you my credentials. He said, because this sounds kind of strange to me. So he sent me his credentials, and he's busted police and military people before. So I sent him all the stuff. He called me and told me he had gotten it. And he said, I'm going to look at this, Dr. Johnson. He said it might take me a year to go through all this. He said, but trust me. He said, I'm going to give you justice. He said, because this don't sound right to me. I called my brother, and I told him that he was looking into it, but it was going to take a year. My brother said, take a year. He said, who is this guy? I said, his name is Donald V. Watkins. He's an attorney, but he's not a criminal attorney. He's an investigator. He said it's going to take him a year. I said, that's what he said. He said, John, man, I could tell you there was a homicide in 2 days. He said, and we didn't even have the pictures he got. And I said, well, you know, if he helping us, man, let's just see what happens. That man called me up in 2 days. He was so pissed off, he cussed like a sailor. He said, how in the hell did they even come to you and tell you this was a suicide? He said, I got one statement that I can read that says this wasn't a suicide. No gunpowder residue on her hands. How are you going to fire a weapon and don't leave gunpowder residue? He said, and all this crap, her hands were washed, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And I said, it's worse than that, man, where you got Lavina laying there, and it's a picture. He poured it out. I say, what does that look like to you? He said, a hole in a tent. I said, yeah. They tried to burn that tent down with Lavina's body in it.
Mm.
The lady who found the body said once if they were cooked. By the way, the Army said males found her body. One male found her body. Well, it turned out a bunch of female cooks found it because they saw a fire on the opposite end of the camp of the post. So they went over there to see what it was, and the tent was on fire. And they said they threw sand on it, put the fire out, and went in there and saw Lavina in there dead. And they know that wasn't where she was. She was killed because there was no blood splash patterns, you know, all over the place. You know, just those two pools of blood. Now there were gravity drops of blood where they came in and where they laid the body down. The canvas that they brought the body in was saturated with blood. And that left a big blood spludge on the ground, you know. So it just every time we look, we found something, you know. We mm-hmm. looked at the rifle that they finally had at the crime scene.
Right.
It was not the rifle that Lavina was issued. Donald Watkins picked that up, and he said, "At least if you're gonna lie, you have the right weapon, you know." So anyway, we still on our...
Yep. So
okay.
let's do this type of answer. Okay, let's do this. And I think we're probably going to have to do part two because there's a lot more that I want people to hear. And, of course, we are recording this in family. One of the reasons why I asked Dr. Johnson to join us is because we are, in fact, getting ready to start documenting some of the cases that we want to submit in the very near future to United Nations officials and also other human rights entities. We know that the only way we are going to get justice in a more expedited manner is to bring this issue, our issues of human rights violations, into international courts. So I don't want Dr. Johnson to have to rush through anything because we want to, you know, begin to prepare transcripts and other kinds of things that will at some point be official documents that will be submitted to the congressional people first and then to United Nations officials. And so we'll be telling you more about how we're going to do some of that when we meet in July for the We Charge Genocide 21 project, the Queen Mother More Weekend, and, of course, that's our reparations rally. So I'm going to have Dr. Johnson to stop now. And Dr. Johnson, if possible, we'll bring you back to do part two to kind of bring it, you know, to the next step because there's a lot of other information, and I want you to really kind of bring it out, particularly because we didn't really go into the fact that you did have the body exhumed and what your findings were. And so I want you to hold on there for now. And what we're going to do is, family, if you have a question or a comment, please press 1 now. And we will take just a couple of questions or comments for now. And then Dr. Johnson will be so kind to join us for part 2. And then we'll go more in depth to what, you know, was revealed once he had the body exhumed, had his own investigators to see the body and examine the body, rather, and what the findings were. And then, of course, other things that have happened in their quest, in the family's quest, to obtain justice and to have this information circulated. Now, I'm pretty sure I have at least two people that are listening right now that have their own either radio programs or TV programs or something like that. So I'm asking you all to, you know, again, to bear with us because we do not want to rush through this conversation or this information. And we are preparing it or really getting prepared so that other communications and media outlets can, in fact, begin to move forward in our demand to have this investigation reopened. So, again, if there's a question or a comment that you have for now, please press 1, and then we'll certainly have you to bring your question forward. Okay, we're going to go to caller at 1619. 1619, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Welcome. How you doing? It's Pastor Von Gene, CEO. I was calling in. I'm texting 300 people and telling everybody to come on in to the show. The word is just fine.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Amen.
So let me
I'm loving
briefly.
The show.
Oh, very, very good. Thank you. Did you have a question or a comment for Dr. Johnson?
No, I want to give him a bit of encouragement because sometimes when you're the one who's facilitating these programs and putting all this stuff together, people forget how much stuff goes on behind the scenes. And I just want to give him encouragement and tell him keep pushing. And you never know who's listening. Never
yeah.
know. Man, that's very
okay,
true.
Right.
So,
that's absolutely.
It. On that note, I land my plane.
All right. Thank you, my brother. Where are you calling in from?
Mesa, Arizona. It's dark now, but it was sunny a couple hours ago. But yeah, Mesa, Arizona.
All right. Good. Thanks. Thank you again for checking in and for your comments.
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
Yes. Let's go to caller. You are at 9498. 9498. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day. 9498. That is the last phone number.
Oh, okay. How you doing, how you doing, Sister Filet? How you doing, Philly? Yeah, I was dozing in and out while I was listening, but it's something heavy. I sure like to hear what actually happened, and do you think that it will be fair that the government, that you said the army, you know, don't they have their own courts and own investigations and everything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
They do.
Yeah.
And even though sometimes you, even if you do independent, they still come up with something crazy and this and that. So I sure like to find out. Because I was dozing in and out, but I was listening a little bit. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a fight, or it was a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I told
you. Know, when you deal with the army, they got their own. Don't they have their own jails, own judges, own courts, own investigations?
Oh yeah.
They got their own stuff.
Yeah, I work for them, so I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, here's
very
the
good
thing,
at
my
hiding
brother.
Stuff.
Here's the thing: to at least make this information more available, because we have a lot of young folks. That see, and this is what Dr. Johnson was saying. We have a lot of young folks that see the Army or the armed services as being a way to, you know, get money,
a way out,
to go to school. And so we, if nothing else, we are bringing information to at least make sure that parents and students and so forth at least know some other things. You know, to look, to possibly be aware of or to be cautious of. So, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, we're doing what we need to do. We don't know what's going to happen as we proceed or in the end of it, but at least we will know that we're doing what we're supposed to do, you see. you know, the rest will be up to a higher authority far beyond in these people, for sure. But again, we're going to do what we're supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? But thank you, my brother.
You know, when you can't get no job, you sure could go enlist in this man's army.
Yep, exactly. And we know that. All right, good things. We have one more caller, and hold on one moment. Caller, you are at 1-840. 1-840, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment, A New Day.
Yes, good evening, everyone.
Greetings, my sister.
Dr. Johnson, you know, my heart goes out to you. You know, I know how hard it is, you know, because that was your daughter.
Yeah.
And that's hard. So now my question is, supposedly there is an initiative, the new whatever, the person in charge of the army, the black guy that President Biden supposedly has some initiative focusing on this subject matter of rape and things like that have happened in the army. Has anyone reached out to you with regard to your daughter's case, you know, since this new regime supposedly is working on this, or have you even heard of it, or how's that work? Just curious.
They've been doing some squawking, if you will, about rape in the military, and they've had programs they've set up and stuff like that, but every time they set up one, they do something else, and it's like a countermeasure. So, you know, there's people still not getting justice, and they still raping women, and they still murdering them. And they don't care that I'm out there raising hell. I got people still sending people in the military, and they ain't going to come back and tell me when things don't go right. And I hate to be narrow-minded, but I said, damn, didn't you hear me complaining about my daughter? Why would you send your child in there? You know, so I just, and when we talk, get on part two, I'm going to tell you my intent was to prove my daughter was murdered. I did that.
Right.
The problem now is there going to be justice? But I'll tell you next time when we do part two what's going on now. You know, people come in telling me stuff. I don't need anybody to tell me. I investigated it. Go to your Congress. Go to somebody else, you know. And I'm not you know, people scared. But you got to understand, I served in the Army. And that is the first thing they teach you, not to have fear. So,
You know, you know, I lost my daughter to something similar. And hail, hail, Lincoln. I'm a Lincolnite, too. I went to Lincoln.
Oh, okay. That's where I graduated from.
Yeah.
What's your name?
Sheila. My name is Sheila Harper. When
did you graduate? Oh, if you don't mind me telling me.
I know. 76.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I graduated in 72, so I'm before you.
Okay. So, before me, but I know you know quite a few people who I happen to know. You know how all of us Lincoln folks end up meeting one another some sort of a way, you know. So just know that you are in my prayers, and I just hope that this issue comes to some resolution, and I'm really disappointed that they have not reached out to you in order to get some more information in attempts to assist you. You know what I'm saying? It sounds everything from what I've heard, it sounds like they're doing the opposite. They're still covering it up. Am I right?
When I do part two, I'm going to tell you why it's being covered up. There's a reason for it.
You know. So know that you're in my prayers. And
well, thank you.
This whole thing about this violence against women, and I can imagine in the military. I'm also surprised that they didn't have a partner for her. So in other words, there was nobody, like, in other words, that would watch out for her in addition to, you know, herself. And it's,
nope. They, well, first of all, it's gross neglect because they were supposed to send her a battle buddy anyway. That's protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they thought was going to happen to a 19-year-old girl that goes in a foreign country where there's all strange men.
Because I remember the case specifically. You know, very pretty girl. I remember it.
Yeah.
I remember the
case. She was a sweetheart, though. Yeah. She really was.
Well, she lives in your heart always.
Yeah, she sure does.
And parents are the ones that solve these cases. Because I know I had to solve my daughter's case, too. Took them a while for them to kind of come up with, you know, agreeing with me. But I solved it, you know, because, you know, we're relentless. So I just wish you much strength and continued courage.
Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you, sister. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And again, as women, this is why with the Million Woman World March and movement now, as women, you know, we need to make sure that our voices are heard. I mean, it's not to say that it'll change anything or that it'll do whatever, but at least we owe it to our women, our girls, our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters. We owe it to them for us to at least say something collectively, be it to congressional people, be it to whomever. I have no faith in the system. So this is, sister, when you say, well, you know, you're kind of disappointed about them not reaching out, I don't have any faith in these people like that, period. But at the same time, we still have to do what is known as due diligence. We need to make sure that our young girls, in particular, the older ones too, but the young girls, they need to see some black women. They need to see some black women with some backbone and standing up and not taking this stuff. They need to see and hear that. And that's what we get ready to show them and others, that some of us are here. And we're not going to let anyone stop us anymore or shut us down or misrepresent beyond a certain point. We're just not allowing it any longer. We owe it to our ancestors. So sister, thank you so much. As usual, you always come in with, you know, wonderful comments and thoughts, and you're greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Take care. God bless you all. Thank you. Okay.
All right, family, we're going to close this session out. I think I do see Brother Reeve in queue, and we're going to get our report from Chirac, or what's also known as Chicago. And I want everyone to pay attention again to what you're getting ready to hear, because what's going on there, rest assured, it's coming your way. If you're living in one of the urban cities, guarantee you, if it's not there yet, it's coming. Okay, so we're going to hear talk to Brother Reeve in a few moments, but before we do, I want to go back to Dr. Johnson and get some closing comments from him. And Dr. Johnson, can you come back to us next week and do part two?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, great. All right, family. Well, Dr. Johnson will be joining us next week. We'll do part two, and we'll pick up, you know, where we're leaving off today. So, Dr. Johnson, your closing comments for tonight.
I just wanted to say I appreciate the people who called in and proved what I set out to prove, and that is that my daughter was murdered. I proved it, and I used the Army's evidence to prove that. People lie, but evidence don't.
Right. Again, for me, and I'm sure for others, this situation needs to be told. It needs to be disseminated. and distributed nationwide and worldwide. We cannot allow this kind of thing to happen and there not be, ample exposure. I mean, we have to do that. So next week when we talk family, we'll talk more about how we're going to do that. We're not going to just sit back and allow this to happen. And lastly, again, there was a situation, I guess it's been, what, Dr. Johnson, maybe 2 years now when they had a Latino woman.
Yeah, there was Vanessa Guillen.
Right. And
yeah.
I mean, that was all over the news.
Yeah.
It was all over the place.
Well, yeah, that's because they said some black guy killed her.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, like suicide is part of our mandate. I don't think so.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And again, family, right. And again,
yeah.
when we go next week into what the evidence showed based on the independent autopsy,
okay.
Surely if there was some doubt, I think that's going to get changed for sure. Okay.
All right.
And so
okay.
Go ahead, Dr. Johnson. Okay. So next week, definitely we'll have you back. I'll give you a call later on this week and give you the exact time. We'll get you in and we'll go with part two for next week.
Okay. Very good.
All right, Dr. Johnson, thank you so much again. And as Sister Sheila said, you know, you and your family are in our prayers. And we thank you for being strong and diligent in obtaining justice. You as you said, you've done what you wanted to do, which is, of course, to prove that they lied and that what they said did not happen the way they said. But at the same time, you know, our people have to be a bit more on point in terms of dealing with some of these issues. And so that is something that we plan to do. So thank you again, Dr. Johnson, and I'll talk with you next week.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
All right, peace to
okay.
you.
Bye-bye.
All right, family, so there you are. And again, we know what this system is, how, and what it does, or what it can do, and what it has done. There's no doubt about any of that. We know the type of treatment or mistreatment that has been demonstrated actually for about 400 plus years that we know for sure. And so, you know, this thing is not going to change anytime soon. I dare say we have got to change. Some of us are not here to try to fix the system. That's not our job. We will fight for certain things, but we're not trying to fix the system. With that said, you will hear us talk more about, we have some things that we're bringing forward in terms of product as well as mission and initiatives to make sure that we have our own. So you'll keep hearing me saying that now, family. Our own. We are branding that phrase and trademarking it because that's also going to be some of our product line, our own. And we'll tell you more about that next week. We have a press conference coming up, or shall I say a media briefing, not a press conference yet, a media briefing so that you will know how we're getting ready to proceed to raise our own monies with our own products. Yep. We've learned some valuable lessons over these past years in terms of why we must have our own everything. And we're going to tell you and show you how we plan to do that. At any rate, let's get ready to go to our live line again. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to talk to Brother Reeven Fellows. Of course, again, for those who are not familiar with Brother Reeve, well, you're in for, a big kind of, not a big surprise, but I will say you'll be very much informed. How about that? Brother Reeve has been with us a few times over the years. And again, it shows you that we have been building not just relationships, but building this movement with folks. So we met Brother Reeve by way of Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. I guess maybe it's been like At least 5 years. Maybe, yeah, at least 5 years. And here we are. We're still hanging. We're still together. And the beautiful thing is he and I fight, y'all. We really do about different things periodically. But never are we apart or separated. We are brother and sister. And so my point is, it's okay to disagree sometimes. When your mission is about our people and liberation, guess what? That's what's going to really come through if you really, really are about it. Now, if you're doing some BS stuff, dime a dozen. But if you're really in it to win it, that's going to be some long-lasting stuff. So, again, if you haven't met Brother Reuben Fellows, I'm going to introduce you right now. And let me open up his mic, and we're going to get this thing rolling here. Oh, there we go. Hey, Brother Reuben, we have you right now. Uh-oh, I'm not hearing you. Something's wrong. Oh, shucks. Okay, not sure why I'm not hearing him, family. Oh, can you hear me, Brother Reeve? Something's wrong. We're not hearing you. Okay. Well, we were all right for a moment, family. For some reason, we are not hearing him. So let me do this. Let me, while I try to figure out what might be going on. All right, let me just share this with you briefly. I mentioned earlier, we started off, of course, with Brother Mumia Abu-Jamal talking about the air situation. I don't know what's going on in your city, but for Philadelphia, it's a little better today. So hopefully it will clear up, but it has definitely affected people that I know in terms of their breathing situation. They're having problems with their eyes and so forth. So once again, we've got to begin to ask people, what's the plan? So with that said, on June the 25th, we certainly invite folk to join us. We've been doing a session every month over at the Nile Gardens. We're there this month. This is our third session at the Nile Gardens. And we will be talking about emergency response and preparedness. Hopefully we'll be introducing, or you'll meet one of our new instructors. Again, she will be giving certification for CPR. And there's another area that she does certification is, and she is a registered nurse, by the way. And so she was trained by way of the Red Cross and all that. So she has all the credentials and everything. But again, we want to make sure we have our own everything. And so starting in our communities to make sure that we have designated people that can do specific things. And so to start with, we're going to be dealing with first aid. We have our own curriculum for first aid. We have our own curriculum coming for other things. By the way, Dr. Kokai is going to be coming to Philly, and we will be doing a weekend with him and a few others. Again, this will be certification. They will be getting acupuncture. He will be coming in October. So we'll be giving you more information about that next week as well, how you can begin to start making your payments, because that particular course is a course that will require you to make some payments. So you can make one payment if you can, but the whole thing is to get the training. It's an 8-hour course. And so you will be getting not only the information or training that deals with acupuncture, but you'll be getting the specialized course that Dr. Matula Shakur developed years ago. And as a result, there are hundreds of folk nationwide that utilize his detox system. So it's not just acupuncture just for, you know, regular body or maintenance and other kinds. This literally helps to detox your body. And this was proven to work because when Dr. Matula Shakur started it, it was to address the need of getting our people off of heroin. And it worked. Okay. So we'll tell you more about that next week. Again, the course here in Philadelphia is going to happen in October, and they're actually going to be going to other cities all over during the course of the summer. But for Philadelphia, we'll be signing folks up for Philadelphia for the first weekend in October. And along with the acupuncture, you'll be getting our own specialized course from MWM as well. So we're moving right along, just as we said. All right, family, I'm not sure how to get Brother Reeb in. And so what I'm going to do is just do an open mic real quick. We only have about 15 minutes left anyway. Again, if you haven't signed up for the Recharge Genocide 21, you need to do that. The Recharge Genocide 21 conference is coming. The Queen Mother More Weekend, rather, is coming July 27th through the 30th. On the 30th, it's a reparations rally. Now, note the date has changed. It was going to be on the 29th, Saturday. We changed it to Sunday because we need Saturday to do the pre-plebiscite session and some other things. So for Sunday is the mass rally, Recharge Genocide, Reparatory Justice / Reparations Now on July the 30th. We will assemble at 52nd Street. It's 52nd and Warren or Bible Way. They changed the name, but we know that it's both named Warren and Bible Way. Right off of what's known as Lansdowne and Lancaster Avenue, where Lansdowne Avenue and Lancaster Avenue meets at 52nd. We will meet there is at the building that we plan to get. That's where we're going to meet, at that building. We want everyone to see it. We want everyone to know that this is the building that we're now going after for our first established institution here in Philadelphia, which will service our women, but also it will service in the context of the Harriet Tubman Justice and Humanity Center. Okay? So, again, you will hear us talk more about that. I'm still trying to get Brother Reeb in. Let me try one more thing because I thought I had him for a moment. Brother Reeb, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, there you are. Okay. We've been trying to – we was calling you. We were trying to get you in. All right. We got him back, family. Great, great, great. Okay. I don't know what was going on, but we've been calling you for a minute now. But anyway, we got you now. So I was telling our family that there's some things going on in Chicago that we need to be aware of. So let's start with the money, the millions of dollars that have been allocated by the new mayor for who and for what?
Well, the migrants that I hear, they voted $151 million for them to be able to get resources on the weekend of the most murderous time in Chicago, which is Memorial Day. And so our people that are out there shooting blacks shoot each other because of lack of resources over the years and times and community support. This same weekend, they shoot about 50-something people. About 52, 53 people, and about 12 of them die. And on this same weekend, they give $51 million of resources to some people that don't have legal paperwork to be here. And that's just an insult itself. And they protested about the week before on a Wednesday, they had a protest, and they were able to not let it pass. Well, the next Wednesday, they had it pass through. And so this is some of the things that are going on here in this town. The new mayor is dealing with that, and just it's an insult to our people for that to happen, and our children don't have any resources in them. So it's just really a bad time right now here in Chicago with leadership.
So, how many millions was allocated for this?
$51 million worth of resources for migrants here in Chicago, and we've been fighting here for reparations. And Sister Ada Evanston, Chicago reparations on the table, and somehow they discovered enough money to give the migrants, and we don't have no resources. So the screaming and hollering is going on. Brother Tyrone Muhammad with the Econ for Social Change, he had to be escorted out of the council because he was really keeping up a big fuss about it. So the police had to come and remove him from the chamber. And Tyrone history is always speaking truth to power. And so they had to walk him out of there. And so, you know, it's just the same. We almost got, 89 black elected officials, the largest in the United States. And we have people here, and we've allowed them to do this for the future of our children. It's just a shame before God itself.
Wow. So, Brother Reed, obviously what the new mayor has done obviously is legal because, you know, there's no way he could get away with that if it wasn't. But the mere fact that he did it, and, I mean, is there a thought of maybe a recall for the mayor?
No, we ain't recalling nobody. We got total recall and lack of memory and recall. That's the kind of recall we got here. This is too much. But I think they have six new black men aldermen, and in total about 19 black aldermen total. The mayor's position, you got to remember, he signed the executive order the week before. They had this money allocated. He had already made an executive order to make sure that this is a sanctuary for the illegal migrants, and then everything else fell in place right after that. And so I believe the mayor wants to do a lot of things, but there's too many people that helped get him elected in power, and most of those are unfortunately are black sisters that are in position that helped him win. CTU, Chicago Teachers Union, and the president of Cook County Board, Tony Pratt-Winkle. She's over the Democratic funding for the Democratic Party here. And SEIU, which is the union with the seniors and workers. So most of those that I just mentioned are ran by sisters. The Jewish people with CTU, there's a sister named Stacy here. She's one out there, but they're backed by some of the Jewish family.
Mm-hmm.
So we just didn't hear our children are being lame ducks. So they call it what they want. 89 black elected officials, the largest in the United States. We have 40% of that are women in power in Chicago, and we still have no power in churches everywhere. And we still have no power, and they'll continue to vote on money and not give the future of our children. God's going to have to do something real strange to this city with us not protecting his children and representing his children. So everybody bringing up an issue about, well, we want to help everybody. Yeah, well, we've been helping everybody a long time. Black folk, we love everybody. We help everybody. But judgment starts at home first. And black children should be a priority first. And so I just think that God going to have to do something to wake these people up. It ain't going to be nice. So I'm trying to keep the blood of Jesus and everything over my door because this ain't making sense.
So, needless to say.
People crying serious business.
needless to say, to hear this, obviously, if black folks are not trying to deal with developing our own party, and that puts it mildly, I mean, that and some other things, but at least, because clearly the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the Green Party, how is any of that helping black folks? And this is a perfect example, family. $50+ million going to some people that ain't got no skin in the game?
Well, it gets a little spooky in that. Now, remember, let me share this with you. I mean, to cut you off, but we voted for a new mayor. We voted for new aldermanic people, and we paid taxes. These people ain't paid taxes from Texas and Venezuela, and they ain't voted on nobody. So we did the voting and the sweating and put everybody in. They came in and got the benefits of $51 million table. Man, the word is not retarded. It's with a P now, P-tarded.
Oh, my God. Let me go to Sister Sheila real quick. Sister Sheila, are you hearing this?
Yes, I'm hearing it. And I don't understand. $50 million is going to immigrants? Is that what you're saying?
$51 million going to migrants in Illinois for a group of people that is not legally registered yet. And they just did that. Now, they blocked it the week before on Wednesday. And by the next Wednesday, people got paid off, picked off. And now, you know, the children out there selling loose squares, DVDs, and shoes, and the migrants out there going to work, getting jobs, getting driver's license. And they doing it big. So,
now, are these migrants from Ukraine or Haiti?
Well, you got the Ukraine. Now, this is interesting. We got a department here called that they have it for new American citizens. They put that together, and so at the table is some of our African brothers and sisters. But just like anything, we not getting first priority, no way. But they try to flip it in. But Ukraine, Venezuelans, the Texas people from Texas, they from everywhere, but they try to mix it up with a little. The Haitians gonna be there. But it's really not a table for that conversation. It's something that we're bringing up. But they use that to kind of justify, well, all the immigrants, the black brothers going to be here, immigrants. And, you know, this town is named after John Baptiste DuSable here in Chicago. So they want to mix it. He's a Haitian brother. But at the end of the day, no matter whenever we're at the table, we always last to eat. But we got to take care of ourselves and we can get to that table. And we haven't had a relationship with our Haitian brother now. We also just voted to name Chicago Highway South Shore, Lakeshore Drive, after Baptiste DuSable. But the Haitian brother have a museum here. We voted, got that done, but we don't have a relationship with our brothers and sisters in Africa. Most of them up on the north side, Jamaican brothers, everybody here. But all of a sudden, we want to talk about a relationship. We didn't have one at all. So it gets real sticky in terms. It doesn't make any sense. And like I say, they think they got hurricanes in other places. I'm trying to figure out what God going to do here because he can't leave it unjust. It ain't going to work like that, but take his children. And our children are out in the street. I mean, our children is just having a lot of issues because we don't have resources. It doesn't make sense.
And it's strange because Philadelphia is using Chicago's model. And I'm sitting here, it doesn't sound like the situation has improved in Chicago.
Improved?
And I'm, it has. So, you know, for us to
now,
use your model as a model to, you know, for Philadelphia. And then the other thing thinking about, what about this Evanston, Illinois reparations? I mean, did Chicago try to at least get in on that? You know, Evanston being right outside of Chicago.
Well, Brother Cam Howard and Cobra and the sister in Everson, I know her, she's an elected official there. They put that on the table and they flipped that. That you had to be living there so many times, so much long. They put them in a lotto. So they pretty much, that was a nice little hit, but it still had its glitches. And then they came to Chicago to put some Willie Wilson, Dr. Wilson, and some others. They put that on the table a little bit here, and it didn't go nowhere. And Dorothy Tillman, former alderwoman, people forget while the smoke screen with all this evidence and stuff. Alderwoman Dorothy Tillman, who was with Martin Luther King and training and been a long-time fighter for our people, she won the victory by accusing all the banks that were involved in banks and Chase Bank, U.S. Bank, and had them apologize. And she put together some legislation that passed to make sure that if anybody had anything to do with our
right.
people being
slavery
enslaved,
disclosure.
That, we would get
the Slavery Disclosure Act. Mm-hmm.
Right. So they passed the garage for the Grant Park down here, Millennium Park. And so that's not being enforced. So then they come with the Evanston, like Sister Dorothy stuff didn't exist. So we got a bunch of every civil rights leader in Chicago is here. Every national leader is here. Every national organization is here. God got to really be, it gets confusing. Because now that I'm talking to you guys, I talk about all the time, but it doesn't even make any sense, and our children are suffering here. And so as our children pick up guns and start to kill each other, and then the black people so crazy, they choose to tell our children, y'all won't go downtown and mess with white people. Y'all cowards. So the children say, okay, this new generation, we're going to go downtown and do some Macy's and get some real authentic stuff. Then the black people go, why y'all down there messing with white people? They people crazy. So they went down there, so we threatened them not to go. Then they go down. Then they get a group of ministers, about 200. So they go in town to meet the young boys down there to stop them from looting. But then all the women in the black church on the south side that they left can't go to the store. They can't go to the park safe. The big mama, grandmama, and the little children. But they going down to make sure the black children don't mess with white folks stuff. Little Ray around the corner.
You know, it's interesting because, I mean, you have the Obama Foundation out there and you have Minister Farrakhan out there. And, you know, you like you said, you have a lot of folks out. Jesse Jackson, you've got a lot of folks out there in Chicago.
Right.
You know, and are they coming to the table at all about any of it? You know, or is there just a national whatever? You know what I mean?
Well, the minister, Mr. Farrakhan, has made his position since day one. They've been saying the hurricanes were coming, the tornadoes were coming, these people weren't going to treat us right. And so his last Savior's Day, which I attended, he made a statement. They finna expose these people. God going to expose, so y'all need to relax and check it out and see what's going to happen, because God finna reveal the truth. And then if you got a problem with your brother, you should be talking to him on the side, not in public. Shoot, less than 2 days later, all the brothers talk about each other in public, and then everybody acting a fool, do everything he said opposite. So his position now is, because you got to remember, the minister decided not to come unless people call, because when he come, everybody get mad. When he come, the Jews that deal with them people start punishing his own people. So then he just said, everybody, I'm just going to warn my sheep, because he came and put his people in a position, all kind of guns here with switches and AK-47s, all these people out with pistols, and the Nation of Islam are out there doing their work with their, you know, entrepreneurship. And he don't want his people to be out there vulnerable, and the first person he come to would be some black people beating soldiers out for his people, so he's going to make sure his men protected, because, Lord behold, if they deal with them on a certain level, Jesus would be showed up real quick around here, Allah, too. So his position has been what I've been telling y'all a long time. I ain't going to deal with stiff-necked people that won't have them put my people out there in jeopardy. But I do know that bean pies and bow ties and then the Jehovah Witness with the bookshelves and straighten up, I can't find but one Christian on a milk crate. I was talking about Jesus on his way. And that brother downtown been saying for 20 years, we looking for the Christians to step up with the Jehovah Witness and the book stand and bean pies and bow ties. And that's not disrespect, because I work closely with Mr. Caleb Muhammad. I've been with the nation, with Justice Ellis, so Mr. Ishmael. So I have a great relationship. I'm just, Sister Ephraim, no, I'll just be dropping the science and let them deal with it. So if they get mad about their preachers and all that, just take it for what it is. But I'm just talking science, mm-hmm. not about your people.
Mm-hmm. So, so to translate that, Sister Sheila, mm-hmm. ain't nobody mm-hmm. really stepping up to do much of anything for whatever reason. Bottom line.
Now, let me say this, Sister Empress, and I say this a lot. Me and you talk a lot. Black women hold majority of power in Chicago. Black women vote most and often. Then I'm gonna tell everybody. I ain't anti-woman. I'm Geraldine's son. Straight front, no chaser. That's my mama. And so if black women in Chicago have too much power, and they vote most and vote often, they're the third largest spender of any nation. And in here, and they all first ladies at the church, second ladies at the church, and they can't get a loan from a bank after they give it to their pastor for foreclosure and get a small business development. The black women have to make a position here to say, hey, pray the devil back to hell, just like they did in Liberia when the sisters got mad and they prayed the dictator out of there and put the first black woman in Liberia to be the president and got them young boys to put the guns down and turn around. It's called pray the devil back to hell. Y'all should Google it. And so I told the sisters here, we got a model that y'all can look at. And so been going organizing some. It's just like the Valley of the Dry Bones. That's what we in. And the minister say, will these bones wake up?
And even if Chirac, I mean, you know what I mean? In order to, you know how the movie depicted, you know, all the women coming together and withholding, you know, to make a change. Remember that? I'm sure you do. Chirac.
That's a good, I'm glad you brought it. As my good brother Mark Allen, who rests in peace, used to be with the National Black Wall Street, International Black, we say, I'm glad you asked, I'm glad you brought it up. Well, this is what you have here. Spike Lee, the number one brother in film, history, and culture, and fighting for the rights of people in Hollywood, and been a stellar of speaking truth about our history, gets with a minister here, Flager, and he got a black Jesus in the pulpit, and he has a large black congregation. And I read of the scripture says the tongue is the most powerful weapon that is, in terms of when you put something out your mouth, you can call it to existence, whether it be laymen, whether it be preachers, whether it be women, men, children, whoever. And you speak something out your mouth, you can create something, because loose lips sink ships. So how do we get a minister in that position in the all-black community with that going on? Again, I ain't talking about who he is. I'm talking about science. And math don't add up with a black brother in Hollywood, and they speak into existence with a movie called Chirac. And so when you speak that and the children start to die from a mouth of a tongue and a movie of that level of magnitude, it becomes then using that piece, they did it in the movie Pray the Devil Back There in Liberia. The women did put on all white. The women did go to the forefront. They did use relationships and having being intimate with their men. They had a spiritual statement. So you got to make that a spiritual statement, not something you plan, don't let your husband see your children and using sex as a tool in your house that ain't spiritually right. So the women in Liberia use it, say, you men can't come to the table, make no decision, ain't no justice, and you ain't getting no peace. that was legit. In Chicago, that move was done without spirituality, laying the ground, and to put that movie out there and not give it the science of what black women could use to use that tool, leave out confusion. Mm-hmm. And what you got is blood running rampant through the city. Black women ain't taking a position. Black pastors ain't taking a position. And most black men ain't in a full position to deal with what's happening from a spiritual point of view. But that sex with hell being held back can be used if the women use it for God's tool and not their personal tool. There ain't no spirit down here. I'm about to join a gang next week. This is getting crazy.
Don't do that. Well, maybe you can join and maybe you can take a leadership position and change their mind. I mean, you know,
don't work like that, sweetie. It don't work like that.
Well, I say that to say that they're the only one getting respect. And like you say,
right. You
can go in. So, but just to give you an example, today, by the grace of God, just to give some hope that's going on, a group called Champs, black men's group here, Michael Jordan just gave them $1 million. It's the year of 23. The Champs group was all mentoring at schools. I'm part of that network with my Books Over Balls program where we put over 300 boys in college. It's called Books Over Balls. Brother Vaughn called for a 1,000-boy march for excellence. And so today, this morning at 8 o'clock, we were all down there, black men and women brought their sons to register, and we had over 800 black boys register, 11 years old up. And they marched from the 39th and Cottage King Drive to 47th and King Drive over to 47th and Cottage Grove and back down to Mandrake Park on 39th and King Cottage Grove, where Mandrake was the brother here in Chicago that used to paint over and whitewash the signs that promoted alcohol, tobacco to young black men, and they say committed suicide jumping off Lake Michigan, jumping off the bridge on Michigan Avenue, but we don't think so. But Mandrake Park, so we had 800 black boys march through this city, and no violence, no problems, and nobody had any problem. They had a great time. We had resources. So hats off to Brother Champs and the other. There was a lot of black men organizations. So that happened today to the glory of the Most High. And that was a blessing today.
That sounds beautiful, 800 young men. Oh, I'm impressed. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mentoring going on too? I mean, like they sign up?
Yeah, they do mentoring. And then the other piece, the police said they was going to stop it this morning, talking about we can't do it. So, well, we told them that's not going to happen, brother. We're going to do what God told us to do. And then a couple of other people didn't want us to do it in the ward. So I ain't going to keep messing with them sisters too hot today because they wearing my nerves out here. But I'm fighting hard for them. But some of them just make you tired, as my mentor say. They make you tired.
You don't get tired. Keep on up with the good fight.
I'm a fighter. You know, God chose me because I'm an athlete. I played ball, so I was a little short, brother. One of the top point guards in Chicago from Simeon High School. Helped raise Ben Wilson, who was the number one player, and put Simeon in the red. So I operated on. I'm always operating as the underdog. The more you say I'm under, the more I get doggish, and we keep coming. We keep it coming. Keep putting fuel on the fire, and I'm going to keep showing you I am who I say I am, and you'll believe it after that skull go down. You're like, oh, my goodness, what happened here?
And train some of these young brothers so that, you know, when we all move on, they'll know how to, you know, do what's necessary in order to keep the younger ones even coming along. You know what I mean? You know,
the only thing about that is, I mean, that's what has been said for 50 years. You know, I can look at records and see where what we just said, right, through all of this that we just said right here, right now, has been said over the past 50 years. So my point is we keep recycling and regurgitating the same things. And here's where the difference comes in. When will we have our own everything? Because until that happens, and again, brother talked about science. Well, let's deal with some facts and science here. As long as our children, as long as our people are under the level of subjugation that they are under, that we are under, we will continue to repeat the same cycles. You see, me coming up, I had brothers. They was in gangs, even then. And in my household, it was crazy because my brothers were in different gangs. So we had stuff going on, you know, for real. You know, I mean, I had one brother from the Valley and the other brother from Nar Street. And so my point is we keep saying the same things over and over, watching it, and yet not realizing in this whole mix, where's our schools? Where's our health facilities? Where is our cultural centers that is not being funded by the enemies, that is ours? And until we understand that reality, we will keep playing this game in such a way that the enemy will continue to play us.
Well, the church plays a major role. And my grandmother and my grandfather were Koji gangsters. So it's real, but I know what the church is supposed to do. But they're actually, sister, using the pastors, black churches, to deal with the migrant situation where it watered down that there's enough for all of us and we love everybody and we shall and all that. They're using the spirituality where God specifically says take care of home first and judge and start Joe Doe. And so they're confusing the people because most of these facilities come near black churches, and they just found out that they're going to be giving black churches funding to kind of house and support it. But the other piece is with young brothers here that are protecting women and doing what we did today, it don't get airtime. So if it don't get the airtime, because there's a young brother named Dion. Here, we break it, we fix it. He did 13 years in the Fed joint. He's back out now, federal prison. When you break it, you fix it. They're not relying on law enforcement and political people to fix the community. They've got together with about 15, 20 young men that they're going to protect the community. So they do. They feed over 200-300 people every Monday here on Chicago's South Side, right in the heart, and they're out feeding the families. And he has an entrepreneur program where he has a T-shirt, stuff is in the stores. So guys like that put in work to come back and protect women. They don't get an airtime that they deserve.
But
I've done a lot
Reed,
of work on trying to organize black women. So that's what happens when they don't see it. They don't know that there are a group of men, like you say, Eat the Nation, that you just can't do anything to black women and we don't move on it. So that doesn't give fear to the young men where people say, man, ain't nobody protecting black women here. Yeah, they
See,
are.
But
they're
Brother
not
Reed,
getting
check this out. Check this out. See, and I understand, overstand or whatever that what you're saying. But here's the reality on the street level, right? We never depend on these people to really advertise or tell our story. I mean, nowadays people more into that, but on the street level, that was never how we rolled. And we figured out and had the ingenuity to do certain things. For example, here in Philly, years ago, not recent, because these people now into the 501 syndrome. But years ago, before that was so popular, and by the way, that's why the churches are now not activist-oriented. Because we had some beautiful churches here in Philly and in other cities, they weren't depending on the 501 money. But a lot of them are now, so their whole program is weak. Now, here in Philly, here's how it used to be on the street. If you did something in certain communities in this city and it was to a woman or a girl, on the street, you was in trouble in this city.
Wow.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
See, and it wasn't about what was said on the news or what was, that wasn't it. That wasn't it at all.
Yeah.
So my point is, later for them, they ain't got to show it. First of all, with social media today, there's enough tools to get your information circulated if that's what you really want to do. But the reality is we're not doing in our communities in such a way that there is consequences for your behavior. And black men, just like black women, got to get it together. You're absolutely correct. That's why I'm doing the work that I do, and others are doing the work they're doing in terms of our sisters. But here's the reality. Until brothers step up and handle their business in our communities the way that only black men can, then, you know, we're going to keep dealing with this situation.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. So what took place in Chicago, and my cousin who saved my life was part of Jeff Ford and them. When Jeff Ford, David Boxtel, and Larry Hoover, and some of the others were here, even though they were into some of the unjust things in the community, you could not kill a black woman. You could not work a rape.
Right.
You could not shoot a black child. You could not disrespect it. That's what their principles, even though they had their negativity. Jeff Ford, Blackstone Rangers, did not allow crack cocaine to come to Chicago, which is one of the first drugs that was so powerful to have a black woman leave her child. So all that, so they removed Jeff. They removed Larry. And then they removed and started locking up black men through CHA housing, three strikes and you're in, Obama and Kamala Harris and Biden and the machine. So they systematically remove black men so boys don't see them. And then using, you go to jail, your woman is CHA and on public gate, you can't come back to that house for your children. You can't go back to the school and volunteer for your child. Most of these brothers that used to be gangs, they won't let them come to the school and volunteer because if they do get in that school, they're going to shut all that activity down because that's their son. So what they've done is move strategically in removing men from the village. And when men like me, personally, I agree with you, but I can tell you my personal testimony. I've been in this city fighting for black women, uplifting black women, call and pray the devil back to hell, black women, and just all on the forefront when Anita, that young lady, when they raised the house, going against Zakiya Boyd when my niece was killed. And thank God for when Chairman Fred introduced me to you and you took it viral. I've been hitting it hard for black women. I tell them I'm Geraldine's son. And hell, I'm catching more hell from black women than white people, period. So there's a crucifixion and a mental illness. I'm telling you, I've been getting down for black women. And it's hard when they don't support you and don't respect you when you do protect them. So there's a force and a spirit of mental illness in our people in post-traumatic PTS, plandemic, Negro syndrome.
Which is why we got to have our own. That's one of the remedies, because we do that from our own perspective and lessen the mixed stuff. What's going on now is it's the mix-up. Is about people of color and all this other stuff, because we're not staking a claim on us, on about what we want, what we're going to do, how we need to do it, our codes of conduct, et cetera. We've got to establish that and implement it ourselves. And until we do that, it's just going to be the mess that it is. And lastly, with that, Brother Reeve, and you know I love and appreciate you, but I'm going to do a flip on you on what you just said. What you just said is applicable to me as it pertains to the brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning,
I
get out here and I fight my behind off. That's right. Fight my behind.
Mm-hmm.
And have put calls out to our brothers. And don't get me wrong, there's a few that definitely stepped up. But for the most part, I put calls out to black men for 10 years to help me, to help our sisters in whatever way they can, not to overburden them or anything like that, but in whatever way they can. So let me tell you how that turned out. Because now creating our own sister armed forces. Because I can't wait for people no more.
Right.
I can. I won't. We just had some white woman just killed. Yeah, a white woman just killed a sister, shot through the door last week, and her child standing there watching.
Well, you know,
you understand?
They flipped the script. Let me say, sister, they didn't flip the script while we was having that, trying to get each other together. Because you always know the people got their hand. Now they done went to the bottom of it and say, it ain't no man, ain't no woman, it's neutral. And the woman, the man, and the man, the woman. So while we were sleeping at that wheel trying to heal, they done flipped the script. There ain't no man in the house, ain't no woman in the house. It's somebody neutral. When you go to school, I had to go off on these people in Chicago about my granddaughter. I didn't send her to school for y'all to tell her what her sexual problem is and where
That's
to pee
right.
at. It's supposed to be two washrooms. How y'all come up with third washroom and got my grandbaby discussing which one to pee in? I'll handle that. Y'all just get us some math and science. You don't got to tell us where the pee is, one washroom and another. You can put a third. If you start talking about a third washroom, you got to start talking about sex and gender specific when I don't want her to be talking about no sex in no school
That's
in
right.
the early age. So now you done forced the hand. What do girls do? What do boys do? What does a penis do? That ain't what she's supposed to be at the school learning. It's math, science, and English, family. Now you can add bilingual and trilingual to my conversation. Now she got to figure out which language she's speaking, bilingual, trilingual, which one you want to do, bisexual, bisexual, trisexual. It's just too much going on for a child, and all I wanted to do was her ABCs.
Right.
Woo-wee. All right, family. Listen, we got to close out, but as y'all can tell, woo. We gonna have to continue this one again as well, because Brother Reed just hit on something that I really did want to talk more about, and that is what they're literally doing there in Chicago when it comes to the public schools. And the teachings, or I don't want to call it teachings, but what is now regulatory in terms of what they are giving the children in terms of sex and other things. Literally, it was passed by law. So we don't have time tonight, but we definitely got to get Brother Reed back to go more into that. And because, again, this is what's getting ready to happen all over the country. Brother Reeve, thank you as usual. You've given our folks more than food for thought. This is stuff that's actually happening, y'all. Again, $51 million have just been given to so-called non-citizens, but yet here our people are going through every single day not having the things that we need. How does $51 million get allocated to a small group, comparatively speaking, when you have the people who built this place, their children, their descendants, not getting what we need? Again, we got to have this conversation more in depth in the future. But Brother Reed, I thank you much. Sister Sheila, always again. And I'm going to let Brother Reed close us out. Brother Reed, your closing comments for tonight.
Well, I just think that we're being, like me and you always, we go at it, we share, we have a mutual respect for one another, and we go and we still love each other. It's got to be the black man and black woman going together. I use the scripture of Deborah in Judges where Barak and the sister Deborah dealt with, at that time, God had been anointing women and raise them up because black men and men were being disobedient to God's scripture and word. So they rose up sisters, as he always do. When the black man was out of pocket, got that sister, had to come by size rib to make him behave and have some understanding, which y'all always do so well. So that story goes back to he was supposed to be killing them warriors and them soldiers, and he was taking too long. And somewhere I read, they say the sister went to ask him, man, why you haven't killed them people like the Most High said? He told me to come ask you the question. So I'm sure she didn't go talking with her neck moving and disrespectful, because a black man being told how to kill men, women, and children when he is in space. Mm-hmm. But he knew that she was anointed and sent by the Most High to have a conversation. Hey, brother, did you handle that business? And the story says that he said, well, no, I ain't scared, but well, what's the problem? He said, well, they in chariots. They got this and that. She said, well, if we fighting and they on wheels and spears and coming at us, we might not have a chance. But I'm trying to figure out, like most men, we study long, we study too wrong. The sister said, well, what you should do, brother, just wait till it rains. And they can't run the buggies and go kill them. You know how y'all do. Y'all simplify stuff and make us look crazy on something we've been trying to figure out for 4 days, 5 years. And so he's like, wow, that's crazy. So he say, okay, that makes sense. So he said, well, I need you to go with me, too, when I go to do this business. Would you go with me? She said, well, you know if I go with you, you don't get no glory. God said, I get the glory. Well, him being a humble man like most brothers not now, hard head, stiff neck, and not applying to God when he send you a spiritual woman to give you a message, he said, I ain't going to be caught in God's wrath. Well, I don't care if I get the glory. I don't want to go and get stuck on stupid and get everybody killed. So come on with me if you want to get the glory. And fast forward, when they get there, they can't get to the man to kill him. The woman had to go do the business and destroy the man anyway. So we got to go together, not black women being bad-footed, pregnant, stand behind us, shut up, don't say nothing, be quiet. We got to go hand in hand, side by side, to beat this demon.
I say.
All right.
Woo. All right, family. Well, nothing more I need to say. I mean, that's it. So listen, we are thankful that we've had this conversation. We're looking forward to now moving things forward in the best ways possible, by any and all means necessary. So listen, next week we will continue with Dr. Johnson and also bring you some other kinds of things. What can we say, family? Love you all. Thank you. You know what we say. If there's no justice, there's no what? Sister Sheila, Brother Reed.
No peace.
No peace. All right.
It's two type of pieces. So figure out which piece we not getting. Amen. Y'all love y'all. Have a
great day. All right. All right, family. We are out. Peace to everyone. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bluetooth mode.